Hey, it's good to be back. We kicked off a new series a couple weeks ago called Blessed. And Dan kicked us off, and we've been looking in this series at some specific sayings of Jesus that are found right at the beginning of what's a famous sermon. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. And there's a famous version of these sayings. It's found in Matthew chapter 5, but there's actually an alternative version that's found in Luke chapter 6. Which is always interesting because whenever two different accounts, in this case Matthew and Luke, sort of tell the same story or record the same event, they'll always emphasize different details or highlight different points or provide a slightly different perspective. And so even though the Matthew 5 version of these sayings in the sermon is the most popular, today we're going to look at the Luke chapter 6 version. Now, before we get there, and I promise we will get there, I did want to tell you a little bit about where I've been and what I've been doing, because I was gone the last 2 weeks. I was actually in Africa climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, if some of you already knew that. And it was an amazing venture. I did it with a few friends, and I actually want to show you a few pictures this morning. Let's see if we can get this to work. Okay, see, now it's not working. So you're going to have to do the pictures for me. Let me show you first. That's me. Standing in front of a really big mountain. And if you don't know much about Mount Kilimanjaro, it's in Tanzania. It's the tallest mountain in Africa at 19,341 feet. It's the tallest freestanding mountain and freestanding volcano in the world. The climb itself, to climb this mountain, it took 8 days to do it. It was about 45 miles total that we hiked through rainforest, through what looked like desert landscape, moonscape, like alpine tundra, all kinds of stuff. And the hardest thing about it was the elevation. So you think climbing a 14er, you know, you're sucking wind at the top of a 14er, try 19,000 feet. So there's just not much air up there. And so you have to go really slowly up the mountain for your body to acclimatize to the lack of oxygen. Because if you don't, you'll get high altitude sickness. And believe me, I saw plenty of people with high altitude sickness on the mountain, and it didn't look pretty. So I say we because I went and I did this with, I climbed this mountain with three friends. I've got a picture of that. And three buddies that I met up with. These are old climbing buddies I met up with in Africa. And we joined six others, and then there were 10 of us total who went as a group up this mountain. And then we had four guides who led us up the mountain, because you have to hire licensed guides to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in Kilimanjaro National Park. It's part of the law. It provides jobs for people in the area. And also, there's no way we could have gotten up to the top without a guide. So that's a good thing. But let me show you one of our lead guides. The lead guide, his name was Ezekiel. That's him. He's a native from the area there. And on day one of this climb, Ezekiel looked at all of us, and he said this. He basically said, "You have to trust me. Like, if I'm going to guide you and lead you up this mountain, you're going to have to follow me. You're going to have to do what I say, step by step. You're just going to have to, and we're going to go really slow. Pole, pole. That's what they say all the time. That means slowly, slowly there. So pole, pole. I know you want to go fast, but you'll never make it up the mountain if you start off fast. You have to go slow. We have to climb ahead. You just have to listen to me and trust me and do what I say." And then he said, this was the first day, he said, "Oh, and don't think about the mountain, because the mountain is not thinking about you." Hakuna Matata, my friends. All the time, Hakuna Matata. So, no worries. And so we had trusted Ezekiel and the guides, and they led us step by step up the mountain, and it was an unforgettable experience. I had a ton of time 8 days, you're hiking, a ton of time alone, a ton of time with friends, a ton of time to just sit and think. I think we've got pictures of us sitting there, just kind of relaxing. And on this whole trip, I thought about a lot of things. And one of the things I thought about was how fortunate I am. Because as I was there, I realized how fortunate I am to have the job, the opportunities, the stuff I've got here back home. Whenever you go to a place like Tanzania, if you've ever been to a sort of a developing country, if you've been to Guatemala with us or other places in the world, you're always confronted first and foremost with this reality that we're just so privileged and we're so fortunate. There's orphanages everywhere there because of the AIDS crisis. The economy is struggling. The average Tanzanian, average annual income is $930 per year compared to $55,000 in the U.S. So, you know, more than 50 times less than what an average American makes. And I saw this most vividly in the lives of our porters. So before you think that this was like this really, really, really hard thing, yes, we actually had porters that helped carry our stuff up the mountain. And it's the way every guide service works there. So you hire local porters, and it provides means for them. They carry some of the heaviest gear, so they would carry like our tent and some of the and the mess tent, some of the group gear, and then all the food. And it was amazing because literally every single morning we would wake up and they would make us. They would also make the food for us. They would make breakfast. We would eat. We would come out. We would strap on our packs. We would take off. They would put everything down. And about halfway through our hike up that day, they would fly right past us on the trail. With like 50 pounds on their heads, like balancing on their heads with their own packs on, and they would get to the next camp before we would, and when we would arrive there, our tents and everything would be set up and dinner would be ready. So it was amazing. But I got to know the porter who helped carry some of my gear. His name was Ojun. I've got a picture of me and Ojun there. And as a porter, Ojun has one of the best jobs in the whole area because it's consistent. He works for a company that's going to provide him regular work. And for the whole trip, for 8 days, carrying gear, hiking, doing everything, and way more than we even did, he made about $100. So that's how much he got paid. And as I'm walking, as I'm thinking, as I'm getting to know the porters, as I'm finding out more about the culture there, I'm just realizing like how fortunate am I? Like, how fortunate am I to have a job and to have the car and to have the kind of stability and to have a home, to make decent pay, to have steady internet, you know, just all those things. I could go on, but if you've ever been to a developing country, you know that's one of the first things that sort of hits you. And I was thinking about that the whole trip. I was also grateful for food on the trip. Now, most backpacking trips, you kind of don't eat very well, and you can't wait to get home to get good food. But this is the exact opposite. So that's a picture of me holding, yes, that is fried chicken in the wilderness. And then on the left, those are these like deep-fried corn dumpling things that I just called hush puppies because that's what they were like. And they were amazing. And we ate like kings and queens because the porters and the guys, they made the most amazing food. They lugged this huge propane tank and this big pot and a big vat of oil so they could deep-fry stuff for us. So we had like fried chicken. We had fried tilapia. We had soup at every meal, celery soup, potato soup, pumpkin soup, banana soup, that was like their specialty, all these different kinds of soups. We have vegetable stew, we had eggs and bacon every morning. This sounded rough, doesn't it? If dinner wasn't ready when we got to camp, there was popcorn ready that they had made for us. And even on two nights, they had baked cakes for us at high altitude in the wilderness. I can't even bake a cake in a kitchen in Denver. Like, I don't know how they did it, but it was amazing. And after every meal, I would sit back and think, like, how fortunate are we that we get this amazing food? And how fortunate am I that I can come home, and the minute I got home, the day I got home, it was my son's birthday, we went out to a nice restaurant to eat. And then I walked home, I got home, and I opened up, you know, our refrigerator, and there was tons of food in it. And you know, getting to know the people there, I know that's not their reality. The kind of food we were eating was way better than anything they're ever going to eat. And it just kind of kept dawning on me just how fortunate I am to have all those things. It rained at first in the beginning of the trip. We can go to the next picture. And we went through all these different kinds of, as I said, climates. We woke up and there was frost on the ground. It started getting colder. The wind started getting more rough. We started gaining more elevation, so obviously oxygen was less. Legs were starting to get more tired. But the truth was, It was a really, really fun trip. I was with new friends. I was with old friends. Our guides and our porters were hilarious. We made jokes the whole time. You know, we would say "Jumbo, Jumbo." You know, every time they passed, "Jumbo, Jumbo." "Poa, Poa." That means like I'm cool. Everything's cool. Or I learned "Poa Kachizi Kamadizi." That means I'm crazy cool, like a banana. It sounds better in Swahili, but. Doesn't really work in English, but we told jokes and we had so much fun with everybody there. On the last night, we had this big celebration, and we got to tell the porters and the guides everything they meant to us. I prayed for them, like out loud. I prayed, and they loved that. And then they like celebrated and they sang these songs and they danced for us. I want to even show you a little bit of video. We'll go ahead and put that out there.
Kilimanjaro, 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 Namawezi, 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 Kilimanjaro, Kilimanjaro, Ewe nyoka, ewe nyoka, ewe nyoka, mbona walizunguka,
walizunguka,
walizunguka, walizunguka, walizunguka, wataka kulila nyama. Namawezi, 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 mlima mrefu sana.
Namawezi,
namawezi, namawezi, namawezi, mlima mrefu.
So how fun does that look? Like, it was just so awesome. And we had so many reasons to celebrate. We had so many reasons to laugh on the whole trip. And you know, again, it just kind of made me realize how awesome my life is that I can do something like this. The next slide I want to show you. Oh, go back one. It started working again. This is my friend Chris. And so I met him out there. He was one of my friends. And he actually lives in Africa. So he is a missionary. He works with an organization called SIM in South Sudan. He's been there for a number of years. He's the country director for South Sudan, so he oversees 40 staff people there, and their focus is helping Christians plant churches in South Sudan. And if you don't know much about South Sudan, it's actually the world's newest country. They declared independence from Sudan a few years ago. But recently, Chris has had to move his entire family out of South Sudan because of the violence and the war, and the persecution that's taking place there. In fact, he's not even allowed back in the country of Sudan, the northern country of Sudan anymore. It's a Muslim-dominated country, because the government has kicked out anybody who is a Western missionary. And not only that, he told me all kinds of stories that the government has now not just kicking out people who are Western missionaries, but even local indigenous Christians are being rounded up. Their stuff is being stolen. They're being thrown into prison. He's had friends thrown into prison for 6 months at a time for no reason whatsoever. There's churches being burned. And he's just telling me story after story of his life and what he's doing. He now lives in Kenya, and he has to just travel sort of secretly up to South Sudan every couple of months. And I'm hearing all this on this mountain where I can freely, you know, be who I want to be. I can be a Christian. I can tell people I'm a pastor. I can pray for, you know, our porters. I can pray in public. I can come home and we can gather anytime we want, and we can pray in any way we want, and we can worship God in any way we want. In fact, we've even got a government, not that threatens us, but that actually gives us tax breaks because we're a religious institution. And that's amazing to just think about how fortunate we are to live in a country and a nation where we can freely worship God in the way we do, compared with a lot of other people around the world. Now, I kind of have all of this churning in my head as I'm hiking on Kilimanjaro. And for 6 days, we hiked, and then we got to what was called Karanga Camp. This was high camp. This was our last camp before we would try to hit the summit. So we got there in the afternoon. We'd get a little bit of rest. We'd have dinner that night. We'd get maybe a couple of hours of sleep, and then we'd wake up at 11:15 p.m. that night and get ready, and then hike up the mountain all through the dark that night to make it up, to try to make it up in time in really cold temperatures and not much air. And so we're sitting there at dinner that night as we're about to finally kind of really make this attempt at the summit. We're sitting there at dinner, And Ezekiel, our guide, comes in, and he wants to give us one last pep talk. Like, you know, this is like the, you know, you can do it kind of thing. Hakuna Matata, my friends, you can do it. And so he comes in, and he wants to give us his final pep talk. And again, I'm kind of excited at this point. The blood's flowing, the adrenaline's going. I'm, you know, thankful and grateful for all the things I've been thinking about for the whole trip. And Ezekiel comes in, and he looks at every single one of us. His dinner that night, he looks at every single one of us in the eyes. And he says, I have something to tell you before we make it up the mountain tonight. I've got something that you need to know that's crucial to you guys making it up the mountain. And then he looks at us and he says this. He says, you're actually really fortunate. Not when you have a lot of stuff, but when you have nothing, when you're poor. He says, you're actually most fortunate, not when you eat a lot, but when you're hungry, when your bellies ache. He said, you're most fortunate, not when you have a lot of reasons to laugh and celebrate, but when you actually weep and mourn. And he said, you're actually most fortunate, not when you can practice your faith freely, but when people hate you and insult you and persecute you for what you believe. And he said that if we could understand these truths, what it meant to be truly fortunate, what it meant to be truly favored and truly blessed, well, that was the key to following him as our guide up the mountain. Now, I wasn't sure, and so I pulled Ezekiel aside a few minutes later, and I was like, well, I want to like tell some people back home what you said, so could you repeat it for me so I could write it down so I could tell them exactly what you just said? And he said, sure, I'll do that. And he did. So here's what he said. We'll actually put it on the screen. He said this, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that is how the ancestors treated the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will grow hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. And woe to you when everyone speaks well of you, for that is how their ancestors treated the false prophets. Okay, so Ezekiel didn't really say those things on Mount Kilimanjaro. But Jesus did, on a different mountain, a long time ago. And I imagine that it was just as shocking to the people who first heard him then as it would have been or would be to us when we read those words today. It's shocking because it's totally backwards from the way that all of us think. I mean, we don't think of poor people, hungry people, weeping people, or persecuted people as blessed, fortunate, favored people. I mean, I think, and you probably are the same way, we think we're blessed because we have a lot of stuff, because we have a good home, because we have good cars, because we have good jobs, because we have great opportunities. We think we're blessed because we have a good meal, because we have a lot to celebrate and laugh about in life. I mean, when things are going well, what do we say? Man, I am so blessed. We think we're blessed because we live in a place and in a country where we can worship God freely, where we can practice our faith, where even when the cultural trends go in a different direction, it doesn't significantly affect our faith or our lives in any major manner. We think that is a reason to feel like we're blessed. But Jesus says, no, actually, You're not blessed because of those things. Actually, those are detrimental. Actually, those aren't good things. In fact, those are lamentable things. He says, woe to you. Not in a condemning sort of way, but just in a, I lament for those of you who have a lot of stuff. Woe to you who are really well fed. Woe to you when people think highly of you, when you've got a bunch of reasons to laugh and celebrate in life. The people who are the most fortunate, the people who are the most favored and the most blessed, it's the poor, the hungry, the weeping, and the persecuted. Now, Jesus doesn't say that poverty itself is a good thing. He doesn't say that persecution itself is a good thing in and of itself, but it's almost as if he's saying, if that's where you are, if that's the place you find yourself in life, then you need to know you're in a place of blessing. Which is, again, totally backwards. We don't think that way. We don't think of those places or those circumstances as blessing. And part of the reason we don't do that is because when we think of poor people or we think of hungry people, what comes to your mind? What comes to my mind are people who probably haven't tried very hard in life. They're people who haven't worked as hard as I have in life. They're people who haven't seized opportunities well in life. They're people who haven't taken responsibility for their lives or made good decisions in their lives. But you know what? I've worked hard. Like, I stayed in school. I did my homework, you know? I tried to make the good grades. I seized the opportunities. I believe the right things. I try to do the right things. I try to take responsibility. I try to make good decisions. Shouldn't I be the one that's blessed because of that? Why, Jesus, would you single out all the people who haven't done those things? Why the poor people, Jesus? Why would you bless them just because they're poor? And you see, when I think that way, what I realize is that I associate blessing with something I've done. I associate blessing with something that I deserve. Because I've worked hard, because I've earned God's favor, He will bless me as a result. And all the people who haven't worked very hard, all the people who have made really bad decisions, all the people who have made their lives into a mess, they don't deserve God's blessing. You see, essentially, I come to this belief that I think blessing is about something I've done, I've achieved, I've accomplished, I deserve. And that's how I think. I don't know if that's the way you think, but I do know that's not the way that God thinks. And that's not the way that God works. That's not the good news that Jesus came to bring. The good news that Jesus came to bring is that the people who deserve no blessing at all are blessed. The people who by no achievement or no accomplishment of their own, they're blessed. They're fortunate. They're the ones who are favored. I mean, that's the kingdom of God announcement that Jesus came to bring. That God came to bless those and announce good news to those who least deserve it and least expect it and most need it. I think if Jesus could summarize like all of these beatitudes that we call them or these blessing statements. You know how I think he would summarize it? I think he would simply say this: blessed are those for whom there is no good reason in the world that they should be blessed. You see, at its core, what these sayings are is good news. It's a gospel announcement. It's an announcement to those who want to follow Jesus, who have no good reason in the world that they can, who least deserve to be blessed and asked to follow Him. It's Jesus looking at them and saying, I want you to follow me. And just so you know, I know the state you're in. I know the mess you've made of your life. I know all those things. And you are still blessed. You know what I think Jesus would say to each of us today through these these four statements in the book of Luke. I think he would say a few things. Number one, I think he would say, if you're here today at New Denver Church, in this service, if you're here and you really are poor, probably not many of us, but maybe you're here today and you really are poor, or you really are hungry, or you really are going through one of those seasons where you're shedding a lot of tears, or you feel like you've just got an ounce of faith left and you just keep getting beat up and beat up and beat up and beat up and you're about ready to give up, I think Jesus would say specifically to you today, you're blessed. Maybe more than anyone else in this room, you are blessed. That this announcement is for you specifically. It's not for all the other. I didn't come for the righteous. I came for you. I came for the people whose lives are falling apart. I came for the people who have made really bad decisions. I came for the people who are still making really bad decisions. And I am announcing to you, I know you don't believe it, and I know your circumstances are really tough. I just want you to know, even in the midst of that, you are blessed. I think Jesus would also say to us this morning, these circumstances, poverty, hunger, weeping, persecution, they are the fertile soil for us to hear the blessing and the calling and the gospel of Jesus. They're the fertile soil for us to hear that message and to receive it and to trust in Him, because when you're poor, when you're hungry, when you don't have all those other things, you really don't have anything else to trust in. And you see, that's why it's so hard. That's why Jesus said it's so lamentable if you have a lot of stuff, because it's going to be really hard for you to let go of that stuff and trust in me. The more stuff you have, the more affluence you have, the more abundance you have, it's going to be really hard for you to put your full confidence and trust and simply turn to me. And so what does that mean for those of us who are wealthy, who do have a lot of stuff, or are going through a great time in life where there's a lot to celebrate or facing no persecution? Should we just give away all of our wealth and become poor? Maybe. Maybe not. He didn't say that. He did say that to one rich guy. Should we like look for persecution in our lives? I'm not sure that's the right thing, but I don't know. Maybe. I know one thing is clear. The more you have, the more abundant your life is, the harder it's going to be for you to see and me to see and for us to experience the true grace of Jesus. It's going to be harder for us to experience the true blessings of the kingdom life. It's going to be harder for me to come to the reality that God doesn't bless the hardworking just because they're hardworking. And He doesn't bless the smart people just because they're smart people. And He doesn't bless people who have made good decisions just because they've made good decisions. He actually blesses people who've made really bad decisions. He blesses people who have screwed their entire lives up. He blesses people who are really irresponsible. That's the message of Jesus. And it's a whole lot easier for me to understand that, to see that, when I don't have a lot of stuff telling me, look at everything I've done. Look at everything I've got. Look at all that I deserve. Another thing I think Jesus meant by these is, this is the way of discipleship. The way of being a disciple or a follower of Jesus is going to be the way of hardship. It's no surprise that this was one of the first sermons Jesus preached to the people who said they wanted to start following Him. And it's almost as if He's saying, hey, before we climb this mountain together, before you follow in my footsteps, you just need to know, this is where blessing is going to be found. It's not going to be found in a lot. It's going to be found in not having anything. And the way of a disciple is eventually going to bring some poverty in your life. The way of a disciple is eventually going to bring a hunger in your life. The way of a disciple, a follower of me, it's going to eventually bring some persecution in your life. And will you ever come to a place where when those things come into our lives, we won't oppose them or resist them or think we've done something wrong that we need to change? But maybe when the difficult things come into our lives, we'll stop and say, this is an opportunity for blessing. This is just the way of following Jesus. And yes, in more poverty and more hunger and more weeping and more persecution, I can receive God's grace and His kingdom work in my life more than ever before. What if we had that kind of perspective when hardship came into our lives? Last thing I think these sayings mean for us as a church is, are we going to be a community of faith that announces these kind of blessings? That announces this kind of gospel message? That when you come to church here, whether it's here in our actual church, or when you come into one of our homes, or you come into one of our groups, or you come into our community in some form or fashion, are we going to be a kind of community that doesn't focus on how responsible you are, how consistent you are, how much you have your life in order, whether you're a Bible-believing Christian that has all the right doctrines and all the right verses memorized and all those kind of things, that we would actually be a community of faith that would say, you know what, if you're a failure, if you've screwed up your life, if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't believe any of the right things, if you're poor, if you're hungry, if you're persecuted, if you're weeping, whatever it is, the blessing of God is on you. And you can find that blessing here among us because we just want to be a community of faith that opens ourselves up to God's blessing and God's favor and God's grace in our lives. What if we could be that kind of community where people, no matter what they are or who they are or where they've been, could find that? That could be our message because that was Jesus' message. That could be our character because that was His character. That could be our heart because that was His heart. Blessed are those for whom there's no good reason in the world that they should be blessed. I did make it to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. Got a picture to verify that. That's me on the left. Thumbs up. Yay. Hakuna Matata. It wasn't easy. After 6 long days of hiking, after setting out for the summit at midnight on the 7th sort of day, morning, in the dark, after no sleep for 24 hours, in like, yeah, it was probably 20 degrees out temperature, and the wind was blowing really hard, so wind chill was probably 0. My like tube and my bladder of water and all that froze, so after like having no oxygen whatsoever, like step after step of climbing in the dark to get to the top, we made it to the top. And do you know why we made it? Because we followed our leader. We followed our guide. Because we couldn't see anything. It was dark. And we're hiking up this mountain and it's freezing cold. And we just have little headlamps on it. And all I can see are the footsteps of my guide in front of me. And by simply following him step by step, we made it up to the top. Right about daybreak, right when the sun was coming up over the clouds to see one of the most amazing landscapes that I've ever seen. But the landscape of God's grace is even more amazing. And blessed are those for whom they have no reason to be blessed. Follow me, Jesus says, and you can find that blessing and be someone who gives that blessing to others. Let me pray. Father God, I pray as we do think about how fortunate we are and how blessed we are, that your words would challenge us they would turn my system upside down. Or perhaps my system is upside down and you'd need to turn me right side up. God, help us to see blessings even in the difficult challenges of life. None of us wants difficulty or pain or hardship. And yet we know you meet us there. Help us to find you there. Help us to see you in a new way. And God, as we follow you today, for each person in this room, wherever we are in that journey, whatever that looks like, God, would you help us continue to take more steps in your direction? Would you help us to continue to put our trust in you as our ultimate guide and our ultimate leader? We pray all of this in your name. Amen.